Okay, we are up to our third Haggadah highlight shiur. Our initial shiur had discussed the earlier parts of the Seder. Last week's shiur discussed some of the early sections of Maggid, and we continue now getting through the body and towards the end of Maggid with a few more highlights. We're up to the famous paragraph of the various Chachamim, including Rabbi Akiva, of course, who were Subub B'nei Brak, and they were spending their whole time incredibly throughout the night, learning and studying and delving into and telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ad Sheh, there, until the Talmidim came and told them that Higiyazman of the Kriya Shema Shal Shacharis, it was already time for Shema, the morning had come, they ended up spending the entire night going over the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Quite incredible. So I saw from Rabbi Lam in his Sefer, The Royal Table, that he quoted an idea from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. I have not seen this idea inside, so I cannot be 100% positive how much is exactly in Rabbi Nachman and how much was Rabbi Lam embellishing or working off of it. But the idea he suggested was that when the Haggadah says, Higiyazman of Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, of Shacharis specifically, that the word Shacharis should be understood on a deeper level as an acronym for the various Arba Banim, the four sons. After all, the Shin and the Yud are a reference to She'eno Yodea, Shin Yud, She'eno Yodea Lishol, that's in the Shin Yud. The Chacham is the Ches, the Rasha is the Resh, and the Tam is the Tuf. So in the letters that make up the word Shacharis, meaning in the morning, you have an allusion to all four of the sons. What's the idea? This is not just a cutesy letter or a word association. So the deeper idea evidently is, as Rabbi Lam tells over from Rabbi Nachman, that when the redemption will come, the Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, Kriya Shema is about Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, and the idea of Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis is the idea that when it will become clear as day, like a morning day, like the morning sky, when it will become Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, when the whole world will understand of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, when the whole world will come to accept and see the reality and the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His control over and creation and mastery over the world, when that time comes, when the redemption comes, the Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis comes, then all of the people, everyone will say that Shema with a tremendous fervor. All the people, all four sons will contribute and all will be beneficiaries of this. No one will be left behind. All four of the sons, Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, will all be redeemed. It's a very nice and very inclusive idea. And I just wanted to suggest a twist on it, which I think could also be quite meaningful, in that, again, the way this is presented, the way I understood it from Rabbi Lam and Rabbi Nachman, this is more a describing of the result, what will happen when we reach the ultimate Geula. I would just suggest in a complementary way, not only is this the result, but this also, we could argue, is the means. That is to say, if we want to usher in, if we want to be the catalyst, if we want to bring the Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, if we want to bring that final redemption, then Shacharis, all four sons, we must do our best to teach and to reach all the different children. When the Talmidim say, Higiyazman Shel Shacharis, the time has come not just to teach the smart children, not just to teach the well-behaved children or the talented children or the tzaddikim, but rather even the simple children, even the difficult children, even the children who can't even ask a question, the most basic things. I think that this is something that certainly in recent years and this most recent generation, the community has gotten much, much more sensitive to, and frankly, probably one of the great accomplishments of the last generation or two. But still, in no part of the Jewish world are we perfect yet in this regard, and the need for the diversity of learning styles and learning levels, the need to, to reach out to, inspire and educate all different types of children. Only when we make sure that everyone can find their place in a school, in a yeshiva, in a seminary, etc. Only when that happens, when all of the Arba Banim have their place, if we could finally reach that, then Higiyazman, Yemirtz Hashem, will get to the Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, the ultimate Geula. Moving on, second idea from the Arba Banim itself. Can't have a Haggadah shiur, let alone a three-part series on the Haggadah, without one idea on the Arba Banim. Many, many, of course, ideas, many, many Divrei Torah, but perhaps one of my favorites comes in the name of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. I saw this quoted in his name in the Arzeh HaLevanon Haggadah, and I'd like to add to this idea that in his name, from an idea which actually appears in his Sefer on Chumash, the Emes Liakov. So when it comes to the four sons, we know the Torah, the Haggadah tells us, Kenega Arba Bonim, Dibra Torah, the Chacham, right, the Rasha, the Tam, and the She'eno Yodea Lishol. And Rav Yaakov asked, you know, rhetorically, how do we know which one is the Chacham? The implicit assumption of the Haggadah, which is itself quite important and should not go underappreciated, that each of the four children, given their differences, need different answers, need different approaches. But that only helps when we know. How do we know which one is the Chacham? How do we know which one is the Tam? Are they wearing signs, declaring, this is who I am, describing, announcing, I'm the Chacham, teach me this way, I'm the Tam, I'm the Rasha, I'm the Shidin Elishol? And the answer obviously is not. So in what other way is it supposed to be known to us? So said Rav Yaakov something remarkable. Until you know otherwise, then you must treat all of the children as if they are a Chacham. Because each child has the potential to be just that. And therefore every father, every parent must aspire that each of his children reach that level. Now I would add, as powerful and I think as poignant and relevant as that is, that as children are, especially when they're younger, we should assume the best and give them the most ambitious and give them the most, give them the benefit of the doubt and push them to the maximum to see the, and hopefully help them reach their untapped potential. I would add, I can't say for sure, but I'd like to assume that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky would agree to this, something that we've become particularly sensitive to over the last number of years, which is that it's an incredibly powerful and empowering idea to start off the educational process that way. Whether it's a parent in the beginning of a child's lifetime, a teacher in the beginning of a given school year, in the beginning of a different relationship, assume the best, maximize the demands and the aspirations you have for that child. And yet, of course, I think it's still a necessary and obvious caveat. If at some point in the process, especially as a parent, but even as a teacher at a smaller micro level and as the parent who has the children for their whole lives, so at some point the children begin to show their individual strengths and weaknesses and differences. And at some point when the child distinguishes themselves or him or herself, and maybe not because they are the best, but maybe they are something a little less than that. They could still be wonderful, but once you see where the child actually is, so then of course you have to tailor it, as the message of the Haggadah is, Kenegad Arba Banim, different answers, different strategies, different approaches, different levels. But I think that, I don't think that contradicts at all what is brought down the name of Yaakov, and I'd like to think that it would be a compliment to his idea, which would be agreed upon by everybody. That's the part that's mentioned in the Haggadah. The part that's mentioned in his commentary on the Torah, Emes Liakov, in Parsha Shmos, is the following. There we, of course, know the story of baby Moshe floating down the river, discovered by Bas Paro. She wants to nurse him. He won't take. He's still crying. And then, of course, the sister Miriam jumps out from the reeds and says, oh, I can have him nursed by the Jewish women. Of course, Moshe ends up being nursed by his mother, Yocheved, until he's finally weaned, and then he can live full-time in the palace. How come baby Moshe wouldn't take from the non-Jewish women who tried to nurse him? So the simplest explanation, of course, is that he simply wasn't used to it. Lots of babies can be finicky. Certain babies will only take a bottle this way, only take a pacifier this way, only can be held by this person or that person. And it makes sense. I don't think it's crazy to assume that a child wouldn't necessarily be interested in nursing from a complete stranger. Some children might, but other children might be a little bit more sensitive or finicky. However, that's not what Chazal say. Chazal tell us that this actually, on a very deep supernatural or metaphysical level, relates to Moshe's greatness and his future destiny. Piv she'osid l'dabre mashchina. This mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu, who eventually is going to be the Adon Hanavi'im, the one who will speak pe el pe adabir bo, who can speak, so to speak, mouth to mouth in the most intimate way as ever in human history with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that mouth that was in the future going to have that level of nevuah, that level of spiritual excellence, so that mouth, piv, it would not be appropriate for that mouth to be nursing from a non-Jewish woman, from a non-Jewish source. That's the Chazal quoted. Okay. So it's interesting, and Rav Yaakov points this out, that in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, and Siman Pei Aleph, the Ramah brings down this Shaila Halacha L'maisa for any child. For whatever the reason is, if the only milk, or if there is milk of the possibility, I should say, for a Jewish child to be nursed by a non-Jewish wet nurse, is there anything wrong with that? Is that milk not kosher because the woman who's nursing isn't Jewish? So says the Ramah, quoting based on Arashba, is the Gra points out as the source, that technically speaking, human milk from a woman is totally kosher, whether it's a Jewish, whether it's the mother or not the mother, whether it's a Jewish woman or a non-Jewish woman, in terms of the objective kosherness of that milk, is totally kosher and therefore, technically speaking, totally mutter for the Jewish baby. However, says the Ramah, it's not appropriate. It shouldn't be done. A Jewish baby shouldn't be nursed by a non-Jewish woman because that milk coming from that non-Jewish person who themselves, nothing wrong with it, but themselves eats not kosher, so that milk coming from that non-Jewish, non-kosher source will be metamtem the lave. We'll have some kind of, clearly this is metaphysical, have some kind of negative impact on the spiritual personality and spiritual potential of that child. Where do we know this from? So I mentioned that the Gra says that the Rashba is the source of this Ramah. And if you take a look on the Rashba, what's his source? The Medrash that we quoted about Moshe. That just like Moshe couldn't, or wouldn't, I should say, nurse from the non-Jewish Egyptians, because he was eventually going to be speaking to Hashem as a Navi, so too, says apparently the Rashba, and the Ramah passings this way, just like Moshe wouldn't, so too we shouldn't either, because of this idea of Timtum HaLev, this metaphysical negative impact. Okay, Ad Kan, the Ramah, with the interpretations in the Shulchan Aruch, comes along Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, he says, I don't understand. What in the world does this have to do with your child, my child, or any other child? I understand why Moshe wouldn't and couldn't and shouldn't have nursed from these non-Jewish women. After all, he, and only he, was the one about whom it could be said, Piv Asid Ledaber Im Hashchina. He was the one who was going to have such a unique and intimate relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Piv Piv Ledarbo. I could understand, okay, it's a metaphysical idea, I can't really rationally understand it, but I can accept it. I can understand it for what it's worth. But what in the world does it have to do with you, me, my child, or anyone else's child? We could have great children that could do wonderful things. They're not going to become the next Adon HaNevi'im. They're not going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. They're not going to be the one who's on Har Sinai. They're not going to be there for 40 days and 40 nights, one-on-one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not going to be the one who has the most intimate nevuah in all history. It's unique to Moshe. One of our 13 principles of faith, one of the Rambam's Yugimili Karim, is that Moshe's nevuah was unique. So maybe that was a unique thing for Moshe. How do we know that that's true for every other Jewish child in all of history, that it's not appropriate for them to be nursing from a non-Jewish woman? What does this Medrash in Moshe have anything to do with anybody else? So answers Rav Yaakov so beautifully. This is in Emes LeYaakov, Shmos, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin, that this story and this Medrash and this halacha of the Rama prove that every child needs to be brought up and taught as if he could become the Moshe Rabbeinu, as if he could become the God of Lador. It's true, suspended disbelief. We know he's not going to be. We know she's not going to be. But in that initial stage especially, we set the bar sky high. We treat them as if they are going to be, literally, the next Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so we all know that they're not going to be, but they could still be great. But by setting the bar that high, that sets a tone for ourselves and subliminally, hopefully even for the child in terms of the expectations for him or her, that we, again, just like we mentioned from Rav Yaakov as it's quoted in the Haggadah, as the child gets older, as they differentiate and distinguish themselves, sometimes for the better and sometimes with some limitations, of course then we adjust our parenting. Of course then we have to adjust our education to make it appropriate for him or her. But it's very important substantively and especially symbolically that at the earliest stages we assume the best. As Rav Yaakov is quoted in the Haggadah, we treat every child like a chacham, and as Rav Yaakov himself says in the Sefer on Chumash, in terms of the issue of the nursing, we treat their child and we hold them to the same standards that we would hold Moshe Rabbeinu, because who knows? Who knows? This child could be another Moshe, or even almost near virtual Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, that is a second idea. Continuing on in the Haggadah and Magid section. So you'll recall that there's this big area in between of Yehisha Amda, which is of course one of the highlights and one of the key and famous paragraphs in the Haggadah, in between Vihisha Amda, and then when we get more towards getting towards the end of the Magid, or getting closer to the end, when we get to the Detzach Hadash and Adam Sfardeya, when you get to the 10 plagues, which is of course also a huge highlight of the Seder, but in between that, Vihisha Amda and the 10 plagues, we have this big body of pages in which we have various psukim that are quoted, which are then and then darshaned by Chazal and by the Haggadah. This is a place in your Haggadah, which depending on your family, sometimes can move quite fast as people try to run through that, hopefully saying all the words, but run through that to get to the next highlight part where people will be singing and other such things. And if you have children, younger children, especially depending on where they went to school, this might be that place where your child keeps on trying to stop you with their big fat binder of Divrei Torah, and sometimes parents or grandparents want to move on. Everyone's family's got their unique little quirks in that regard. But in that body of area where we have all these references of psukim and drashos. So one of the sections is where we quote the pasuk from Devarim, Perek Chavhei, pasuk Vav, V'yehi Sham Lagoy, that the Jewish people, you know, went down and were in Egypt, and they were there in Egypt, became a nation, Lagoy, and we say in Agada, Shehayu Yisrael, Mitsuyonim Sham. That's where they became distinctive. Mitsuyonim, they became distinctive. V'yehi Sham Lagoy, that's where the Jewish people went from just being a ragtag group of children, you know, somewhat disunified and challenged family of the children of Yaakov, and they became the distinct and unified nation of Israel, the Am Yisrael, the Klal Yisrael. That's what it says in the Haggadah based on the Pasuk in Devarim. So in the Rav Soloveitchik Haggadah, the one that was published by the OU Press and put together by Rabbi Menachem Ginak, so there on page 66, Rav Soloveitchik quotes the Zohar. And the Zohar there apparently says that when it says of Yusham Lagoy, that there in Egypt they became a nation, it was Davka there. It had to be there that they became, that we became a nation. Why Davka there? What was so crucial to our formation as a people, as a nation, as an Am, that it had to be in Mitzrayim? So here Rav Soloveitchik elaborates and explains the Zohar, and he says what the Zohar means is as follows. It had to be Sham, it had to be there, it had to be Mitzrayim. We could not have become a great people if we had not first spent time in Egypt. Because if we had not been there, we would never have gone, if we had not gone through the trauma and the crisis of Shibud Mitzrayim, of the tremendous persecution and servitude, as painful as that was, it was necessary in our growth and our formation as a nation. How so? Why? So said the Rav, because you cannot hate the Satan, you cannot hate Satan, if you never knew him. We had to be up close and personally see and experience the evil of Mitzrayim in order to truly know what evil is, to know what we stand against. Said the Rav, it would not have been enough. It was not enough for us to just to hear stories or to read or to learn about the evils that are in the world or perpetrated by the Egyptians, but rather we as a people needed to truly come face to face with and experience and unfortunately even be the victim of that evil. Yosef was sold into the house of Potiphar, the Rav HaTabachim. Do we even know what that phrase means? It means the chief executioner, said Rav Soloveitchik. Yosef, it's not a coincidence, was sold into the house of the chief executioner of Egypt, because there even he, at that early stage, needed to see firsthand the Egyptian cruelty. Had Yaakov and his children stayed in Canaan, had there never been a famine, had they never had to come down to Egypt, we never would have developed our sensitivity towards fairness and honesty. The Jewish people, for time immemorial, have been known, have been famous for our tremendous sensitivity, our social justice, in the most general sense of that term, not getting into politics of what the preferred policies are in a secular democracy to fulfill those values. But the values themselves of caring for people, caring for the stranger, caring for the poor, and the way that is even internally, let alone in our political system, that should be expressed, our famous, instinctive, national hatred of cruelty, all of these things, says of Soloveitchik, we have as a nation, and it all is because it's been imprinted in our national and collective DNA because of the experience we had in Egypt. We have that sensitivity towards cruelty because we felt the whip on our bare backs in the slave pits of Egypt. That's why we appreciate the laws of not oppressing the stranger, of not taking advantage of people, of being honest, of being care, of being sensitive. Only through that pain and despair did we become the great nation that we were destined to be and that we became. I want to just add, because when I saw this idea of the Rav, it triggered in my mind something that I only recently came across from Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin in his Sefer Pri Tzadok on Parshas Matos, Os Yud, where he makes a very similar point about a different difficult period of our history, the Bein HaMetzarim, the 3 weeks in between Tisha B'Av and Shiva Sar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. And we know that this time period is referred to as the Bein HaMitzarim, which is taken from the Pasuk in the beginning of Eicha, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Gimel, Kolrod Feha Hisiguha, Bein HaMitzarim. Which of course on a simple level means that all those who pursued us are enemies, they caught up to us. Bein HaMitzarim, in between the straits, in between the challenging days of Shiva Sar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, that's when we could no longer outrun the Churban, and it caught up with us, and eventually the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. However, in a profound and beautiful Hasidic play on words, so Reb Tzadok quoted from the Magid Mimezrich, who said, don't read it Rod Feha, Resh Vav Dalid Pe Yud Hey, Rod Feha, those who pursued us, those who pursued the Jewish people, but rather read it Rod Fe Hashem. Separate the hey away from the rest of the word, have that represent Hashem. Kol Rod Fe Hashem. All those who are running after Hashem, Rodev Acher Hasagas Hisgalus Hashem, all those people who are running after, who are truly pursuing, who are passionate about, are looking to grow, they're on fire with growth, they're running after, getting closer to Hashem, having Hashem revealed to them, only those people, as the pasuk continues, Hisiguha Beina Mitzarim, people on that level, people are looking for that, we can accomplish that, Yachal Hasiga, says Reb Tzadok, in the name of the Magen Mezrich, Yachal Hasiga Biyoser Bein HaMitzarim. That it's dafka through these most difficult, challenging 3 weeks, the 3 weeks where we feel so alone and so abandoned by Kadosh Baruch Hu. We were getting punished, weren't we? We were going through such difficult persecutions, and yet, says Rav Tzadok from the Magid Mimezrich, it's dafka during that period where we can truly achieve spiritual greatness. Or as he says at the end of the paragraph, Aide harichok v'haseter nitzrach acharkach l'hachzik b'makom gavoa yoter l'mala. It's only because we went through such a difficult pain, we felt so distant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that that actually motivates us and helps catalyze us and sensitize us to an even greater shi'ifa, a greater striving, a greater redifa, as he called it, after spirituality. So, not exactly, but very, very reminiscent in my mind of this idea of Soloveitchik here on the Haggadah, of the Yushom Lagoy, as the Zohar says. It had to be there, only there, Yisrael Mitzuyan, and we became the distinctive, unique Jewish people because of the difficulties we had in Mitzrayim. And last but not least, to conclude, I want to have an idea, share with you an idea from the Dayenu. Dayenu, of course, one of everyone's favorite songs and parts of the Seder, and we all sing it together, but we sometimes overlook the fact that there's an introductory statement, a short phrase right before the Dayenu, Kama malos tovos lamakom aleinu. How do we translate that? So generally, I think we assume, Kama malos tovos, how many different levels lamakom aleinu did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for us? And then, what are those different malos? So whatever it is, I didn't count it at the 15, 16, whatever the number is, of stanzas in the Dayenu. Okay, wonderful. That's a good introduction. And then we have the song of the Dayenu. However, there are two questions that one can ask on this. One I think is not so well known, and it wasn't well known to me until I just recently came across it. And one which I think is the classic question that everyone asks every year on the Dayenu. So the first question is more of a technical one, but I think we'll see that it's not merely technical, it's actually the window to something profound, which is, if that is the correct translation of this introduction, Kama malos tovos l'makom aleinu, then really it should be Kama malos tovos mimakom aleinu. How many degrees, how many levels of good, of kindness and bracha and blessing, mimakom aleinu, did we get from Hashem? Mimakom should be the preface of the prefix of the mem, mimakom, from Hashem. Why l'makom? That doesn't seem to be grammatically correct. That's the first question. The second question, which is, again, the more well-known and I think obvious and, you know, broader question, which is, what's pshat in Dayenu to begin with? I mean, Dayenu, it's enough. It would have been enough if Hashem had taken us out of Mitzrayim, but not split the Yamsuf. It would be enough if He'd taken us to Har Sinai and then give us the Torah. It would be enough if He took us through the Midbar, not taking us through Eretz Yisrael. What are you talking about? No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't have been enough. Not even close. What does that mean? How can we be saying, Dayenu, it was enough, it was enough, it was enough? No, it wouldn't have been. What's going on? So in order to answer both of these questions, the Malbim has a very beautiful and profound interpretation. And it starts with his explanation of that introductory phrase, Kama Malos, and then it sheds light on the entire paragraph, and the entire song of Dayenu. The basic thesis is, according to the Malbim, that each and every stanza, each and every part of the song of Dayenu is another level worthy of praise and thank you, Hakaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What we're saying when we say Dayenu isn't that it would have been enough for us. Of course it wouldn't have been enough. But rather, it would have been enough that, in the sense of, each one is deserving of a thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't think, the Malbim explains, the Haggadah is telling us, don't think that it's only a thank you because Hashem gave us everything. No, each and every one of those, even if they wouldn't have been followed by the things that came after them, each and every one of those, in and of themselves, as imperfect, as incomplete as they are, each and every one of them would have deserved, and did deserve, their own thank you. As a result, says the Malbim, now we can go back to that opening phrase and re-understand it. he translates, not kama malos tovos lomoko malenu, not how much did Hashem do for us, but how much do we owe him? That's why it's lo, kama malos tovos, how many good things do we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu alenu for what he did for us? Not kama malos tovos, how many good things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for us. Kama malos tovos lamakum, how many good things, how many good praises lamakum for Hashem alenu are on us to say. In fact, if you take a look in the Malbim Haggadah, he actually translates malos not as levels the way we did, but rather as praises. Kama malos, how many praises, tovos, great praises, lamakum to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that he did alenu for us. And the answer is all these different stanzas, each one of themselves deserving of praise, even though they were all incomplete. The larger point, which I think is so important, as I mentioned, is that even though none of these stages was perfect, even though none of them would have been sufficient in and of themselves, and yet, we cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Each one of them was good, and each one of them would have deserved and does deserve gratitude in and of themselves. This idea, underscoring that Dayenu is really a communication of the message of thank you, of Hakar Satov, is incredibly important. First of all, gratitude is probably the key mida when it comes to all Bein Adam L'Chavero. But number two, it's also, according to many, notably the Chovas HaLavavos, but not only him, but maybe most famously the Chovas HaLavavos, he says that gratitude, Hakar Satov, is the key to all Avodas Hashem, including all Bein Adam L'Makom. After all of mitzvah, all of Torah life, says Chovas HaLavavos, ultimately is a chiyuv, is a machayev on us as an expression of Hakar Satov, of gratitude for all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for him. When we realize that we would have nothing, not life, not liberty, not anything without HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so just like he saved our lives, he's given us everything, he's given us our life, as a result we owe him, and the way we, so to speak, discharge that debt is through our life of Torah and mitzvot. But it's really all, not a burden, but rather all an expression of Hakar Satov. More to say on that, but obviously not for now. And if that's true about Avodas Hashem generally, the Ibn Ezra and others specifically say that Dafka the Seder, Dafka Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, uniquely and specifically in the micro level, is also one big Hakar Satov. When the children ask, Ma Avodah Zos Lachem, in essence, translate the Ibn Ezra, they're saying, why do we have to do this all? And our answer to them, says the Ibn Ezra, is, we're saying, you know why we have to do this all? Out of Hakar Satov, because if it wouldn't have been for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'd be still stuck, we'd still be slaves in Egypt. And because Hashem took us out, He freed us, He saved us, He gave us life, Hakar Satov, therefore we owe Him. So the Seder, specifically, all of Avodas Hashem, Benam Lamakom L'Chavero, it's all one big, incredible, important expression of Hakar Satov. And what we're learning through the Malbim about from Dayenu is that we shouldn't think when it comes to Hakar Satov, whether it's to other people, to our parents, to Hashem, in religion in general, except, we shouldn't think that Hakar Satov is only worthy when we get the final, whatever the final is, and whatever the context is. Whenever we get the perfect, the end, the whole, that's great. When we can get there, in whatever the context is, of course, we have even a bigger thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or to whoever is helping us. But even when it's a small amount, even when it's not perfect yet, even when there's still more to go, or even if we end up not getting everything we needed, but still we got something, that always, whether it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu or another person, that always is deserving of Hakar Satov Dayenu. I think this is a message that would be relevant and inspiring and instructive every year. After all, Chovas HaLevavos thinks that it's a timeless message. All of Avodas Hashem is predicated on Hakar Satov. But I think we all appreciate that this year in particular, this is an especially important message for us to internalize. After all, there is none of us, I venture, almost nobody who is having Pesach and the Seder in the way that they had expected. Some of us were planning on going somewhere, now we can't go. Others of us were planning on hosting people, now it looks like we'll be without them. Hopefully, there'll be very, very few people, although there are going to be some, and our heart goes out to them, who are be literally alone. But we'll all, almost all of us, even if we're not alone, be in a much smaller family unit or a much smaller group and a much smaller Seder than we would have otherwise expected. Needless to say, our Yontif is going to be different than we expected. Our Chalamoid is going to be different than we would have otherwise expected. And on some level, it would be natural to focus on the negative and think about all the things we don't have. And yet, of course, that is not healthy emotionally, and it's also not appropriate or healthy religiously or spiritually. That's part of the lesson, I think, that's particularly relevant this year from the Dayenu. Because even in this difficult time, Rahman al-Islam, there are people who are quite sick, and there are people who have relatives who are sick, or even a little bit sick. Wherever we are, and all of us are affected financially and other inconveniences, some small, some large, some grave, some less so. But all of us, no matter what, have what to be thankful for. This is not the best way to do it, but sometimes the most instructive way is to think about it this way. No matter what you're worried about, your health, your financial situation, etc., in almost any of our cases, I venture to say, there's someone that we know or someone we could easily think of who has it worse. So it's not the best way to think about things, to be thinking about what Nebuchadnezzar other people don't have, but sometimes that's actually what's helpful. But even without hopefully needing to use that as a contrasting point, and again, we all probably can think of people, as much as our retirement or our parnasa may be hurting, there are other people who had less to begin with who have gotten hurt even worse. Maybe we're a little bit sick, other people are very sick, whatever the case may be. But we have what to be grateful for. If we have even basic health, let alone good health, we don't have as much money. I'm not making light of anything, chas v'shalom, I hope that's clear. But we all have, even in this dark and difficult time, we have what to be grateful for. And the message of Dayenu is that at the Seder night and over this Pesach, part of our avoda, maybe this year it'll be more of an avoda than it would have been in a different year, but part of our avoda is to focus on each and every piece, each and everything we have gotten from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be thankful for all of that. It may not be as much as we wanted. It may not be as much as we would have expected even a month ago, but it's something, and it's deserving of tremendous Hakaras HaTov. And on that vein, I thank everyone for joining, not only the three Haggadah Shurim, but all the Shurim we've been giving now for, what has it exactly been, 2+ weeks, almost 3 weeks, I think. I can't remember exactly when we started the Zoom Shurim, but thank God they've all been well attended and nicely received, and I very much appreciate everyone participating in the Shurim, and the feedback, and the texting, and the email I've gotten, and I wish everyone, I have Hakaras HaTov to all of you for participating, and I'm not sure exactly what we'll be doing over Chol HaMoed or after Pesach. Who knows what the world will look like? Who knows what my schedule will be? Who knows what your schedule will be? But my hope is that as long as there is a need, Hashem should give me the strength to be able to continue giving these shiurim in one form or another. And I hope that as many of you as possible continue to keep on listening. Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Thank you everyone for listening. Have a wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov.